echoing valley. An elven king, gentle his master, moves in robes of wind. And the poet on your breath, sweeter than peaches, bitter as grandfather time, may slip past you in a rhythm and shadow, but is received between the lines. Liddy, 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 hey, ahoka, hey. Liddy, 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 liddy. Ring them bells, child. Ring them bells, child. Ring them bells, child. Ring them bells, child. Because there's no place like home. No place like home. And there's no place like home.
And coming up next on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org, it's Bathrop's Pierre's Broadsides, the April 8th to 2010 edition. Stay tuned.
Mm-hmm.
that was Dark Was the Night, Cold Was the Ground by Blind Willie Johnson. Very few lyrics there, if any. And that was from the Great Depression, American music in the 30s. Hey, but we're not in a depression. Happy days are here again, right? For some, but not for most. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. I'm Robert, and this is Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides, 2 hours of local civil rights complaints, and your chance to call in and do some complaining or commending, if you must, of your own. The call-in number here is 831-427-3772. I was going to have on the air a special guest, but we didn't make the meet, and the meetup didn't happen, so I'll have to wait another time. That's Herman, who is actually trying to arrange a car camp, kind of an art car camp, but a car camp nonetheless. We didn't quite put it together last fall when we were one of our target dates, but it may happen again. Who knows? We'll be talking with him about his questionable plans and what he's up to. And your thoughts on a number of issues. The number again here is 831-427-3772, 427-3772. You can call in, and we'll talk. Got a lot of little things to kind of get through, not in any particular order, but tomorrow is a demonstration in front of the Bookshop Coonerty, also known as the Bookshop Santa Cruz. The Coonerty family owns the bookshop. And Ryan Coonerty is the vice mayor of Santa Cruz, responsible for some repressive legislation that I've denounced on this station a number of times. In his own way, worse than current mayor Mike Rotkin, who is going to be retiring after the current season, or at least that's what he told us when he came to a Huff meeting. Huff is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. The group that's going to be throwing the protest, or at least we're going to be contributing to it in front of the bookshop. The issue has to do with some of the things that happened in the late spring, the closing of the armory, the increased pressure on poor and homeless people who sleep outside and face $97, $98 citations for doing what we all have to do every night after 11 o'clock at night, fall asleep, which is actually technically and specifically illegal on any and all public property in the city of Santa Cruz. And since there's shelter for a fraction of the homeless people, a small fraction, less than 5%, I'd say, that's, kind of a violation of your constitutional right not to be harassed when you do what you need to do to survive and aren't harming anyone else. Violation of due process, cruel and unusual punishment, torture, sleep deprivation, you name it. There's a really interesting brief which Ed Fry, the attorney for Robert Blind Bear Facer, a homeless man who went to court last year fighting that sleeping ban law and fighting his tickets under the law, wrote, which I think I'm going to read today, if I can find it, my big bulky bag here, which I may be able to do. I think actually I have it right here. That's going to be one thing I'm going to do. I'm also going to play. We're going to be talking about this protest coming up tomorrow, and hopefully some of you are listening want to come and witness what's happening. A week from tomorrow, Becky Johnson, a local activist with homeless civil rights issues, who has her own blog and website, BeckyJohnsonOneWomanTalking.blogspot.com. Just Google for Becky Johnson. You can find her. She and three others, I was one of the other three others, were given citations for sinister song singing on the sidewalk, which is my way of describing the police department's tickets for unreasonably disturbing noise. And it was kind of strange because we've been doing that kind of protest in front of the bookshop, which essentially involves tabling and feeding homeless people and giving out literature and interviewing people and occasionally singing a song about the lack of civil rights in Santa Cruz for homeless people. And the folks living upstairs didn't like our music and demanded the police give us a ticket, which the police obliged them by doing, which they didn't have to do. And one of the tickets was dismissed last week. That's the one against a woman named Michelle, who wasn't even there. But there was no case presented. The complaining witness did not show up in court. However, it appears from Attorney Ed Fry, he's also taking on the case of Becky Johnson next week. His conversations with City Attorney John Barisoni, the city is rolling out the heavy guns to blast away Becky Johnson's right to sing and engage in traditional First Amendment activity on the sidewalks of Santa Cruz at the behest of residents who want to sleep during the day upstairs in the St. George Hotel. I have nothing against people who want to sleep during the day, particularly if they work at night. I can kind of be sympathetic to that, actually. But Pacific Avenue is a busy street and has all kinds of commercial activities, and you can't single out people who are engaging in First Amendment activity and suppress them because you don't like the noise level. If it's not an extremely high noise level that really ultimately becomes physically disturbing, that's really the criteria for a ticket under this strange law, unreasonably disturbing noises. It has to be physically annoying and not necessary in connection with another activity otherwise lawfully conducted, which we were doing, which is to say protesting, tabling, leafleting, telling the community about the real facts around Vice Mayor Coonerty's laws and his council's behavior and the police department's activities with respect to the homeless folks in Santa Cruz. So 1:30 to 3:30 tomorrow in front of the bookshop Santa Cruz. Doesn't look like we're going to be serving people food. My apologies for that. The usual food maestro, Jumbo Gumbo Joe Schultz, is out of town, although I think he will be back next Friday to be serving food at the trial of Becky Johnson at the courthouse at 10 o'clock. It'll probably start at 9:30 there. But tomorrow, on April 9th, there's going to be a... We're going to recreate all the conditions under which these tickets were given to us, as many as we can, and sing at exactly the same volume we did before, which we thought was completely legal and has been done many times on Pacific Avenue, and have some witnesses there to observe and give their critical opinions. Maybe we'll get a thumbs down for the quality of our singing. But the right to sing politically is really something that is pretty much, we had thought, well established. But apparently not when the Downtown Association, the Santa Cruz Police Department, and the city attorney all get their shaggy heads together. Or maybe you might say well-shaved heads together. I'm not sure. Crew-cut heads together. Anyway, come on down. Join us 1:30 to 3:30. And we'll be doing more. We'll be having a speak-out. People will be talking about what's been happening on the streets. We'll be giving out literature, giving you a chance to sign petitions. There'll be some possible discussions of a tent city that might replace or might be set up after the winter shelter armory ends, and all that's left is what's called the Paul Lee Loft, which is the only emergency walk-in shelter. It isn't really emergency walk-in shelter. It's it's a sign-up activity. You actually get on a waiting list for it. So really, unless there's an ISSP, Interface Satellite Shelter Program, a residual one still going, I'm not entirely clear on that, but that would only take care of a couple dozen people out of the hundreds and hundreds of homeless people who are outside. And really the issue for homeless people is not give us lots of shelter, but don't go after us if you don't have any alternatives just because you want to drive us away. That's just not the kind of Santa Cruz I want to see, and that doesn't comport with the Constitution. And I even say that's not the American way, though it probably actually is in some respects the American way in terms of racism, genocide, foreign wars, aggression abroad, and so forth. But that's an American way I think we want to turn away from. So, Well, I did promise I was going to read you this this great brief in the Robert Facer case. I'm also going to... I'm going to read the police report written by the officer who ticketed four of us in this incident back in January in front of the bookshop, where we were actually dramatizing the number of homeless deaths that happened last year in the county, three times that happened the year before, nearly three times according to the amended figures given at the homeless memorial ceremony in December out at the Homeless Services Center. The officer who ticketed us gave us a We got a copy of the document, which took a long time coming and numerous visits to the police department and so forth. But we finally got it, and I'm going to be posting it online for people to read. You can read the officer's side of the story. Apparently the officer didn't think enough of the story to even show up in court on Tuesday when the first of her victims Michelle was there with all her witnesses to prove that not only was there no unreasonably disturbing noise going on, but that she wasn't even present. So it wasn't clear why the city attorney dropped that case, except that for the obvious reason that she wasn't there at all and it was a mistake. But why drag her? They'd already, a month before, tried her in absentia, found her guilty after giving her a court date for a month later, so she didn't even know she was in court. And when she went there on the day that she was due in March, they told her she'd already been charged $445. She was able to get that rescheduled, and when she went to the rescheduled hearing, again, in many of these appearances, losing time from her own working job, which she needs to do in order to pay her rent, there was nobody there at all. The city attorney didn't even do her the privilege of giving a courtesy call saying that they weren't going to even pursue these charges against her. It's a really kind of either incompetent or nasty approach by City Attorney John Barisone and the Santa Cruz Police Department around these issues. And the complainant, Simon Riley, Sean Riley was the complainant. And but presumably, according to conversations that Attorney Ed Fry had with City Attorney Barisone last night, and Ed may be calling in to talk a bit about that, this case will be going forward next week, so that's why tomorrow we're going to be, that's one of the reasons we'll be in front of the bookshop. Another is mainly to heck with the cases and to heck with this silly use of a singing law. There are important issues to be brought to the community around the laws that criminalize homeless people generally and the need for homeless people to be able to find their own shelters and be left alone, and even might even say aided and supported by the community as they do that. You see this happening, you hear about this happening in other communities. Reno as a tent city, Ontario, California as a tent city. Their tent city is kind of sprouting up in numerous places because people have to have a place to be, and it's safer to be in groups at different points than it is to try to hide from the police alone yourself in the bushes. I guess there are exceptions to that rule, too. But let's begin with some tape, though, rather than all me babbling and chattering away at you. If you want to call in with any thoughts on this, you can, 427-3772, 427-3772. Give a call, and we'll talk. But here's some tape I made in the hallway of the county building outside Department 10, which is the courtroom where people go for their traffic and infraction tickets. That's the ticket that some of us will be going into that court, unless you disqualify Commissioner Kim Baskett, which I often recommend you do. Actually, usually I recommend you do, even though that throws you into the grim clutches of often Ariadne Simons upstairs. You might get into Volkman's court, which is next door. You can sometimes you go into departments one or two. One is Ariadne Simons. Two is Timothy Volkman. Simons is pretty uniformly horrible. Volkman has not yet shown his colors in infraction cases, but he did give a sort of fair hearing to Anna Richardson and Miguel de Leon, the two homeless musicians who were dragged into court for sleeping during the day downtown next to their possessions on public property. I think it was on public property, or at least in public. And the police tried to falsely claim this was camping, that they had the intention of remaining overnight, that they had set up a campsite. And in fact, Volkman found, no, you can't, that's not, that would be illegal. That would be a cause for contempt of court because an injunction had been cooked up by the city attorney against these two last year and is in force. And I've talked about that at great length on this show, how bad that injunction is. Bad law, bad practice, bad constitutional implications, so forth, bad ethics. But Volkman found, no, you got to prove that they actually set up a campsite or that they're sleeping after 11 o'clock at night. So he said he threw that out, but he did find that the injunction was just okie dokie. You're allowed to keep going after them and keep looking for them. If they fall asleep at night in downtown area, you can drag them in again, and that might be, 5 days in jail for contempt, 240 hours of community service, and big fines as well. who knows? So things aren't so good. But you go, but he might. We don't know how Volkman stands on local infraction cases, which are, you know, sitting on the sidewalk, unreasonably disturbing noises, you know, playing a guitar against the wishes of a shop owner nearby, which isn't a crime, but actually is treated by the police as one. And so I was downstairs in the corridor of Michelle's trial, or non-trial, because when she went in, she found, though she was still on the calendar, as I said, they didn't have the courtesy to let her know that she was not going to, that the cop and the witnesses were not going to show up, that the city attorney was not going to be there. We were all there. We filed in and we filed out. But I decided to hang out a bit to find out how other people were being treated. And there were a number of cases of unreasonably disturbing noises. This ordinance being used against street musicians on Pacific Avenue. It's also being used against, by police late at night, against folks who are having a party. And, you know, in those cases, actually, a different section of that law is actually, it's actually not quite the same law. It's an earlier section of the law. There are two laws. One's a noise curfew law. No person shall, between the hours of 10 p.m. and 8 a.m., make, cause, suffer, or permit to be made any offensive noise made within 100 feet of any building or place regularly used for sleeping, or which disturbs or would tend to disturb any person within hearing distance of such noise. So, while that's a little, it might be a little hypersensitive, it's after 10 o'clock at night. One can understand why things need to quiet down for the ordinary person after 10 o'clock at night, who has things she or he has to do during the day. But the noise ordinance at other times is called unreasonably disturbing noises. It's 9.36020. The noise curfew I mentioned before is 010. And it says, no person shall make, cause, suffer, or permit to be made any noises or sounds unreasonably disturbing, physically annoying to persons of ordinary sensitiveness, or which are so harsh or so prolonged or unnatural or unusual in their use, time, or place as to cause physical discomfort to any person, and which are not necessary in connection with an activity which is otherwise lawfully conducted. So that's a much higher standard in the sense that it allows for a lot more volume, because it actually allows for really very, very physically annoying noises if they're necessary in connection with a lawfully conducted activity. First Amendment singing on Pacific Avenue is a lawfully conducted activity. You have to sing at the volume where people can actually hear you. And if you're doing a political protest, they have to be able to hear you as they walk by and are talking to their friends, let's say, or looking in the store window. So it has to be louder than conversational speech. If it's so loud as to be physically annoying, physically disturbing, and unusually physically disturbing, then it's, and you know, and it's not necessary in connection with that First Amendment purpose, then presumably it would violate the ordinance. Although the ordinance is still pretty vague. I mean, when we asked police officers, at least I think I asked one of the police officers, Officer Schoenfeld, giving us the ticket, how loud is too loud, she wouldn't tell us. She wouldn't tell us if, you know, we wanted to be able to obey the law, but she gave us no standards. So it's really unconstitutionally vague. And the law is, you know, is really kind of defective, unless you're talking about something that's hurting the eardrums of an ordinary person, which we weren't doing. Yet, we are being pursued for this stuff. So we'll be back tomorrow kind of reasserting this. And down in the courts in the basement of tomorrow when we have our protest from 1:30 to 3:30 in front of the bookshop, come on down, 1520 Pacific Avenue. Other people have gotten citations for this kind of stuff, too. And this is an interview I had with four young women, students in a house, who, according to the officer's testimony, there are actually two officers, but the officer, David Forbus, not our beloved Dan Forbus, who's down on the mall, but his brother, apparently, they're both in the Santa Cruz Police Department, he had knocked on the door. They'd come down to investigate a fight across the street from this house, and that, you know, apparently that had all been cleared up by the time they arrived or soon thereafter. But then they noticed noise coming from the house, music coming from the house, party and music. So they knocked on the door, claimed that they weren't heard, knocked and knocked again, then came in after a period of time. Police claimed there were like 65 to 100 people there. The four women on the court, on the in court under penalty of perjury swore there were no more than 25 people, and they knew all the people there. Police claimed there was underage drinking, but they gave no indication they had ever checked anybody's ID. But unfortunately, the four women were not savvy enough to raise this issue in court, and so that didn't enter in. And, of course, the judge found in favor of the police and fined them each individually, even though they were not convicted of individually making any kind of noise, and even though they were charged under the wrong law. They were charged under the law that happens before 10 o'clock, when this happened after 10 o'clock. And so that, I suppose, actually, they can be charged with the law after 10 o'clock because that goes 24 hours a day. It's a higher standard to say that it has to be, you know, actually physically disturbing, whereas the law after 10 o'clock for unreasonably disturbing noises is, it just has to be such as to, you have to be within, if it can be heard within 100 feet of a place where people sleep. But they were not convicted individually of making any noise whatsoever, and yet they were found guilty. Now, I guess that can be subsumed under the wording, no person shall make, cause, suffer, or permit to be made, claiming that they were, you know, they were people on the lease of the house, and therefore they permitted it to be made. And indeed, I believe they were there. Anyway, here's the conversation we had in the hallway of the court. It has to be said that referee Kim Baskett did dismiss a second charge, which has to do with huge fines for having a party house, where you're being warned and you don't shape up after the warnings. That's why I call it the Rotkin Law, which was passed some years ago, which puts you in jeopardy if somebody else who was leasing the house previously made some noise and got a warning. Then you can get a much steeper fine if there's a party there which causes noise that disturbs the neighbors. The real issue here was no neighbors complained about this noise. There was no, according to the police officer's testimony, no neighbors complained. According to the police officer's testimony, even though I was told by Sergeant Harms downtown that all these tickets issue on citizen complaint and not from the police department, and he didn't explain why that was, and I found that, you know, kind of unusual. I'm saying if a crime is a crime, it doesn't matter whether the police officer sees it or an ordinary citizen sees it. And he insisted that wasn't the case, and I said, send me the information that shows you that's the policy or shows me the law that states that. I'm still waiting for his communication on that. He hasn't sent it to me yet. But who knows? It may arrive one of these days, or maybe he'll be in court, and he'll answer that question when my trial comes up in probably mid-May. I'm guessing it's going to happen, if it happens at all. But in this particular case of these four women, there was no citizen complaint. The police officer just decided, apparently, on the instruction of his lieutenant or commander, who was not present, to issue them citations. And here's the conversation we had in the hallway.
Department 10, we just had four students convicted of what? Unreasonably disturbing noises.
More than 100.
For $250 each, or did you get a lesser fee?
$250 each, but there's seven housemates total. Only four of us were cited, so that's going to be divided up between seven. So.
Did the officers ever allege, because I didn't hear it, that any one of you individually made any unreasonable noises?
No, not individually.
And I notice also that they use, you're cited on the calendar for the unreasonably noises before 10 o'clock, but she used the phrase noise curfew, which refers to after 10 o'clock at night. Because if you look here on the court calendar, show me your court calendar case here. Notice it's 020. 010 is the noise curfew. So it looks like they cited you under another law.
Oh,
this is for before 10 when the standard is actually higher. You can make more noise. And then the only evidence...
Were we broken up pretty early? I don't even remember. He was saying like 1:30.
1:30 a.m.
Yeah,
and actually, it's true. There is a higher standard. You can make more noise before 10 o'clock. But if it's at 1:30, if they're citing you under the pre-10 o'clock law... presumably, I mean, you can still be guilty at 1:30 of violating the pre-10 o'clock law if the noise is loud enough. The question was, did it meet that standard? And to me, that wasn't clear. And apparently that the standard in these cases is supposed to be beyond a reasonable doubt, which is a pretty high standard in court. So if they're conflicting opinions and, you know, it's 40-50-50 or 60-70-60-30 or 80, that's not good enough. Beyond any reasonable doubt, beyond a reasonable doubt, not beyond any doubt. I mean, it could be a possible doubt, but a reasonable doubt. If there's a reasonable doubt that it's too loud. And the only testimony that it was too loud came from the police officer. So it all became a matter of one police officer's opinion versus four residents. Now, admittedly, the residents were in a position to not to want citations, and to it's in their interest to say, you know, it's not too loud. But there's no, the officer didn't present any objective stuff, no decibel meter, no second witness, although it's not required in the statute that the officer present a decibel meter there. You know, it does seem to be that, as I've often seen, judges tend to favor the police department testimony, and that's why I often advise people, if you want to be found not guilty, you have to get the police officer to say things which, if true, will exonerate you, will show that you're not guilty of some element of the crime and that the case is not proved beyond a reasonable doubt out of the police officer's mouth. It's not good enough if you do it. They have to do it. They're not going to do it intentionally. Obviously, they're trying to do the opposite. But if you can find something specific that they say that shows that some element of your crime is not proved, then, you know, the judge is far more likely to be stuck with having to accept that and find you not guilty because she doesn't want to suggest the police officer is lying. Certainly not. And if the law is what it is, then that's how it goes. I mean, this happened in the case of a guy called Donnie a year or two ago. Donnie was sitting listening to music in front of the Del Mar Theater against a building that was in a closed building. I think it was what is now that little cafe next to the Del Mar, which was then closed up and was actually vacant. And some musician was playing on the sidewalk, and a cop came along and said, "You're seated there. You're within 14 feet of a building. Seated, that's illegal because you're sitting on the sidewalk," and gave Donnie a ticket. Well, there's an exception to the sitting ordinance that says if you are watching a permitted musical performance, that you can sit even next to one of the sacred business buildings on Pacific Avenue, one of the sacred vacant business buildings, normally reserved, you know, you're supposed to pass them in hallowed tones with a hushed voice and, you know, and scurry on to go spend money somewhere else and certainly not clutter up the avenue with your presence in that way under the ordinance. The downtown ordinance is passed and by the Rotkin Coonerty Council, or let's just say made worse by the Rotkin Coonerty Council this last year. And the reason I say that is Rotkin's the mayor, Coonerty is the vice mayor. Well, Donnie was, you know, he the way he argued his case, and he rehearsed it very well, I thought, before he went into court, was he asked of the police officer, you know, "Did you see me? Did you see the musician? Was the musician performing? Was I listening to the music?" And then he thanked the police officer, and he said to the judge, "If you examine the exception section, you will find that there is an exception if you're listening to a permitted performance." And permitted doesn't mean has a permit. It means, I mean, who knows what it means, but it says permitted. It doesn't specify requires a permit, so it could mean allowed. And people are allowed to perform music, and you can sit and listen to performers leaning up against a building under at least one interpretation of this law. And there is a rule in court, which a lot of us have thought was pretty clear, that if there are two interpretations of a law and one is more favorable to the defendant, it's really the obligation of the court to accept the one that's more favorable to the defendant if there's any ambiguity. Not just because we want criminals to get off, but because if an individual wants to avoid committing a crime, the law has to be clear. And this law, you know, does leave an exception for permitted activity if you're sitting on the sidewalk. So, the point here is he got the police officer to testify to all these facts one by one, and then he pulled them all together. He didn't try to get the police officer, didn't try to challenge the police officer's testimony. "Yeah, you come on, you saw me sitting there, didn't you? Yeah, I mean, why did you give me a ticket?" It wasn't any of that. It was more element by element, then you show, well, then I'm not guilty. And he was found not guilty, and that was how that worked. However, when you go into court, you don't usually know. You have to rehearse this kind of stuff. And you think, you know, the judge will you know, reasonably listen to me and weigh, give my testimony equal weight and so forth. And, of course, that's not true. Judges give police testimony much more weight than they give to ordinary people. I mean, I saw that happen several times in the courtroom when I was watching these cases on Tuesday. And let's hear some more of the testimony from these four women, or at least the conversation I had with them in the hallway.
Right to me.
AM, I take it, not PM.
Their whole description of the party is totally skewed. So, I mean, I didn't really have time to, like, tell the judge how wrong it was.
You can tell the community, because that's what this radio show is about. What's your name?
Jimmy Rosenkranz.
Just to advise folks, we're down here on April 5th, and it's about 3:05, and we're in the corridors during a recess outside Department 10. Kim.
And actually, I believe it's April 6th, not 5th. My mistake. It's Tuesday was the 6th.
Ask its court. What actually happened? What was it? This was a couple months ago?
Yeah, it was in November. We were kind of just having, like, a little party. All of us just kind of had, like, our dates. It wasn't that many people. There's seven of us that live there. So, I don't know, it's like 25 people. The cops said there's, like, 100, which is just blown out of proportion. Seven cops.
65 to 100.
Yeah, seven cops were called. There was more noise when the cops came than there were when the party was. Just kind of bizarre that, you know, we're being charged for unreasonable noise and all this noise brought by the police. It's just...
How long did the entire... Did the police focus on your house, or were they focused... It was originally some sort of fight happening across the way. Right?
Yeah, there was a fight that broke out between the neighbors. We have, like, a frat house living next door to us, and so I guess the cops came, so they were called on that. They kind of heard some music. It wasn't really loud, because we do try and keep the noise to minimum. We're trying to be considerate of the neighbors, but they just came and things got out of hand. I guess they tried to come into the house. They didn't, and one of our guests didn't really think that they had permission.
They entered our house without permission.
So in other words, the officer claimed there was no response. The reason there was this officer, David Forbes, who was testifying, that you actually heard but didn't answer the door.
Well, the house is kind of large, and so none of us were actually aware that the police were there. And so I guess one of our friends that was there opened the door, or apparently Officer Forbes said that he opened it, and she was trying to find us, went to one side of the house where none of us were there, went back to tell the police that, hey, I'm trying to, like, I'm going to get one of the residents, just hold on. And while she was going to find us, they walk in. Our friends that were, like, in the living room kind of told them, no, you're not allowed to come into the house. Like, the residents are coming, and that's when things got out of hand. Officer Forbes threw our friend on, like, the marble ground for no reason, and basically things got heated. We were all ticketed.
Now, did the officer do any...
Now, this actually is an important part of the story that I should have followed up on, because the arrival of, if it's true, there were seven squad cars, and then violence on the part of Officer Forbes, if that is in fact what happened, could be the reason that citations were issued for excessive noise later, because it's a nice civil lawsuit if police invade a home, rough up people, you know, spend a lot of money with cop cars in the area, and then don't even come away with a charge. That doesn't look too good, either in the newspapers or in subsequent civil lawsuits. So, you know, I wasn't there. I have not, you know, talked to Officer Forbes about this or anybody else except the four people who, you know, presumably have a certain axe to grind. They were found guilty. They have to split seven ways a $1,000 fine, four $250 fines. So, you know, it's hard to tell. But it's interesting, in retrospect, listening to this, what, you know, one can get some indication of other things that are happening that might have been the rationale for these citations. Or, you know, might have been a perfectly justified unreasonable noise citation. But again, I become particularly sensitive to this issue because I've continued to ask the police department through Sergeant Harms what the standards are for unreasonable noise on Pacific Avenue, because they seem to be really contingent upon the preferences of the police department or the residents with whom they closely cooperate, rather than upon any objective standard or any fair standard that has anything to do with the actual law as written. Which I read earlier. It's a pretty vague law, and it obviously has real constitutional problems. I mean, some people singing is going to bother other people. Do those people who it bothers have the right to drive them away? Well, there is a move-along law that talks about you have to move a display device every hour if you're challenged, and that is something that these people could have tried to do, except that we weren't really using a display device. We were just singing, although I guess They could have argued that our political table was a display device, but this was not what they argued. They instead wanted to use unreasonably disturbing noises to drive us away on January 6th when we were doing our protest in front of the bookshop. And I'm going to keep going back to this case because I think it's really important, and because we are, in fact, focusing on this case tomorrow when we will return to the bookshop on Friday, April 9th at 1:30, and invite you to join us. Again, this earlier situation in court is an interesting one, and let's hear some more from the four women who were ticketed for a November incident on the west side, I believe it was. These are UCSC students.
You, and I'm speaking with four women here, see any officer actually go up to someone and examine their ID, accusing them of being an underage drinker?
No.
That's four no's. Would you have seen it, or would you have been somewhere else? I mean, in other words, might it have happened outside your notice?
Seen underage drinking?
Seen the officers seeking the ID of somebody. Did they look for anybody's ID?
No, they didn't. They didn't look at anyone's IDs except for us, and we're all 21, so...
That would have been a good question to ask the officer.
Yeah.
Did you check the IDs of anyone in the house?
Yeah.
See, and often these matters you think about afterward, but you know, who knows? You know, this requires, if you ever get into court again, you need to sit down and rehearse all the questions you're going to ask these officers. And then, even then, you need to sort of calm down and
it
after.
It'll never happen again.
It'll never happen again, for sure. Hopefully.
I know, right? I hope not.
So, again, we've been talking with
Jimmy Rosenkrantz.
And Jimmy, you had a fine. You're going to get a fine out of this individual?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a little over $100, but it's a lot better than a little over $400, which what it initially was.
So the total amount of the fine for all four of you is?
$750.
Now, what's your name?
Camilla.
I'm not entirely clear. I thought it was $1,000, but perhaps less. Although I thought she said $250 each and four different residents, but... In any case, they were found guilty, and the issue is the police behavior in the house and the court's behavior in judging this testimony.
Camilla, what was your perspective on this?
You know, I think things are still blowing out of proportion a bit, but I'm pretty happy about the fine because it was a lot higher than it would have been.
Was it a drunken, loud, and crazy party? Admit it.
Never. I don't believe in those, you know.
You're smiling, but are you because you can't suffer any further penalties.
Yeah.
I mean, would you take a different stance than...
Jimmy?
Than Jimmy here.
I kind of take the same stance, but I'm still pretty happy about
if you were a police officer, would you have issued a ticket for loud and unreasonable noise, or should I say unreasonably disturbing noise, or noise curfew, or whatever?
No, I just probably would have done, I don't know.
If you were a neighbor, would you have been concerned about the noise there?
I'm not, I don't know how loud it was.
Our neighbors weren't, though. Our neighbors specifically, actually, we're talking with?
Taylor.
Go ahead, Taylor.
We talked to our neighbors after this event, went to apologize for any noise we may have made, and they specifically said that they did not call the police on us for any noise.
They would have been good witnesses to bring into court.
Yes. They called the cops on some of our neighbors who were fighting in front of our house, not on the noise from our house.
Have any of you four ever been cited for this, or has the house been cited when you were residents for this kind of activity?
I don't think so, because over the summer there were multiple people subletting rooms. Like, we went home for the summer and people subletted, and that's when the officer said that they gave the last ticket.
Well, you've all been very, very bad women, and I want nothing more to do with any of you. We've been talking with
Taylor, Camilla, Jimmy,
and even
Chen.
Thanks a lot. Anything you want to add? Any other thoughts? Or...
None.
Okay. We said that there was a discrepancy in the officer testimony?
Yeah, he told our friend Jen when he was giving her that ticket after the fact of the party something completely different than he said today in court.
And what did he tell you before? What were the differences between what he said to you?
He led her to believe that this was like instead of those four individual tickets, so that's why Jen signed it.
Yeah, but I think it was just a misunderstanding, though, because I called him afterwards, and he's like, well, I thought, you know, like, I didn't know that's what you thought.
It's interesting that the officer...
And what is being referred to here is that apparently several days after this initial incident at 1:30 in the morning or whenever it was, where four of them were ticketed with unreasonably disturbing noises, a second officer who appeared in court came back and issued them a citation for having an unruly house or an overly loud house, which is the one which gives a much bigger fine. And the claim of this woman who you just heard is that they were being assured this was not going to happen, but it did happen anyway. And she chalks it up to a misunderstanding, which could be.
Corbis may have wanted not to give you citation because he may have believed that you should only give tickets if a citizen is complaining from an adjacent house or something. But he was directed by his lieutenant, apparently, he says, to give you the citations. And then the next day, another police officer came, or the next Monday, and then gave you a citation for an unruly house. You, what's your name?
I'm Logan.
And Logan, you say you heard Councilmember Robinson, that's the name of the councilmember who was watching this trial, talk to the two police officers afterward.
Yeah, they were outside and she was telling one of the officers not to give up and keep on trying with the unruly noise gathering ticket.
Right, because in fact the judge or the commissioner found that you couldn't be found guilty of an unruly house or whatever it's called. You got the unreasonable noise tickets individually, which I found strange, but the unruly house ticket, you have required a warning. I think she was trying to split the baby in a way. She was trying to say, see how reasonable I am. When in fact, there didn't seem to be, again, you didn't have an attorney representing you, and you were inexperienced in these trials, so, you know, you didn't know quite what questions to ask. I mean, you seem pretty clear, though, Taylor, in saying that you had a disagreement with some of the officers' testimony.
Yeah, because I remember exactly that night how many people were there. I remember, like, I can remember in my mind which of our friends were there. I know all of them were between the ages of 21 and 24.
Did you check their IDs?
I did not, but I have known them for a long time, so I know their age.
How many people were at? You say there were 20 people at the party?
No more than 25 people.
You knew each of them individually to be over?
Yeah. Strangers? Yeah, there was no strangers. Random acquaintances. They're all close friends, so I know all of their ages.
Seven of us that live in the house, so, you know, two friends each, it's like kind of like 30 people. So, I mean, I guess it could easily be mistaken for a party when in our minds it's like we're having a couple friends over.
Does this happen to any other friends that you know, in or around the university in terms of getting these kinds of citations? No, so you're saying no, it hasn't.
No.
Okay. Did you have any thoughts, Logan, you wanted to say, because I asked everybody else?
Well, I look at this kind of case. It seems like they're trying to collect extra revenue for themselves with finding everybody in tickets individually. And crack down on people having fun and freedom of choice and all the above. I think they're out of line.
What brought you to this? Are you guys all friends? You know each other?
I don't know them at all. I just came for my own traffic ticket and I was late. I have to see if I can still fight it. And I caught the whole part of their case, and it was interesting to watch.
And they're all hugging each other, or at least one of them is.
Yeah.
Excellent.
I think, yeah, we gotta go. Can I shout out?
Please.
Boob lives on.
Thank you very much.
That's our sorority.
Keep it up. Oh, if people want to contact you, like, you have an email, you can be reached if people have an interest in this case.
Yeah, I don't know. No.
Okay, 423 Huff, and I'll get in touch with you.
Hey, you're the guy that just.
And that was an incident in the basement of the county building, in the hallway, an interview with four people who got cited for unreasonably disturbing noises, which is the charge that three of us will be facing at different individual trials in the months ahead for singing sinister songs on the sidewalk in front of Bookshop Santa Cruz. So, I would like to apologize to all you who've been trying to call in feverishly. Both lines apparently are now open. They weren't before. 427-3772, 427-3772 is the number to call in if you'd like to try. And if you tried before and got a busy signal, hopefully you won't get one now. So do give it a try if you'd like to do that. And perhaps that's going to happen. In the meantime, let's take a brief musical break. Thank you. Hoping these songs are going to have a little more lyrical quality, but that was another song from the Depression, and it was called I'm Slappin' 7th Avenue. And, it was by Helen and... Duke Ellington and his famous orchestra. So, again, call-in number here is 427-3772. I'm expecting a call from Dan Bronson, who is scheduled to give a report, but he may have tried to call in earlier and been foiled by a busy line. I apologize to you, Dan, if you tried to do that. Please try again. Oh, he may be calling at 7. Let's hope that that's what's happening. Also, Attorney Ed Fry may also be calling in to talk about this case, which, again, comes up a week from tomorrow. And he'll be he's actually also going to be defending a number of other folks. He's defending Becky. He may be defending me. We're not sure yet. And I believe he may be defending Robert Facer, who's defending in another case for the sleeping ban. And again, the charges are essentially singing songs on the sidewalk outside the bookshop Santa Cruz to the discomfort of two residents who didn't like the singing and apparently didn't want to close their windows or something, although that is a little sketchy. That was something I heard afterward, but not too clear on that fact. What I'm going to do, however, just for those who are interested, and I'm going to actually post this online, is read the police report as to how this went down, from Officer Schoenfeld, L. Schoenfeld, or actually it's signed Schoenfield. Boy, have we been mangling her name. My apologies to Officer Schoenfeld, and that's what it is. It's 159 LS. That's on the police report. So all these, please ignore all the misspellings and the Santa Cruz Indy Media of her name. My apologies, Officer I guess when you think you've got a name right and you keep thinking it's the same way, but it isn't, and you have got to look more closely. Anyway, here's her police report about what happened in this case 3 months ago on January 6th when we were giving out information about the homeless deaths and singing songs about the issue, satirical songs, which I've sung on the radio before. Downtown is one of them, and it's a good song. It's got some cool lyrics. We've created some more. We have one. Here's a typical verse. Where are the songs on the sidewalk today? The best have gone away. Downtown, a single complaint will have the cops out to send the singers on their way. Downtown, sing a song of protest just outside the local bookshop. Music with a message means a steep fine makes the poor stop singing their tale. So stop singing your doubt. You'll see bigots on phones all calling cops out to come downtown, muzzling those they fear downtown. Don't want your kind so near downtown. Uniforms smother our dreams. One of the verses. I think that actually we created that verse after the fact, but we had some earlier verses that we sang, and you can actually find these verses online. If you go to Becky Johnson, onewomantalking.blogspot.com, or, I don't know, downtown, and then HUFF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, the name of the group that civil rights-ish type concerns that were that this song came out of. I cooked up most of the lyrics, but a number of us have been singing this song for years, since we've been trying to take back public space on the sidewalk from the tender clutches of the merchants and the residents who want to essentially drive away any street culture downtown that isn't commercially oriented. It at least often feels that way, and that seems to be the way things are pushing. Anyway, the narrative report from Officer Schoenfield reads as follows. On January 6th, 10:06, around 1500 hours, and that would be 3 o'clock, I was dispatched to the 1500 block of Pacific Avenue for a noise complaint. Dispatch advised that the reporting party, Sean Riley, had been hearing loud singing and an electric piano for the last 4 hours, and he was willing to sign a citizen's complaint citation. Riley stated that the group singing was outside near Bookshop Santa Cruz. I recognize the description of the group to be Robert Norris, Becky Johnson, and a couple more individuals who I did not know. I had passed the group singing outside Bookshop Santa Cruz approximately 5 minutes earlier. I arrived on the scene and approached the group who was singing. Norris was standing near the group, and I recognized Johnson as being one of the singers, but did not recognize the other female and male singing. I approached the group and stood right next to them. I made eye contact with Johnson and said hello to the group. Instead of stopping singing to speak with me, the group started singing louder and continued to play the electric piano. Norris yelled at Johnson to start videotaping, and I saw that Johnson had a video camera with her. I asked the group if they could talk to me. Johnson immediately informed me that I was rude for interrupting them. I explained to the group that a citizen had called in to complain about the noise and they wanted to sign a complaint. I asked the group to lower their music or to move somewhere else so I could avoid giving them a ticket. The group, including Norris and Johnson, immediately started arguing with me regarding if I was telling them to leave and if I believed the noise was unreasonable. I attempted to explain several times I was not making the site, but a citizen would be, and I was facilitating it. Given the group's antagonistic comments and constant interruptions of my explanation, I saw no behavior indicative that they were going to stop singing. I advised dispatch to call Riley and advise him if he still wanted to sign a citation, he would need to come downstairs and sign. I met Riley on the sidewalk, and Norris and Johnson immediately started yelling questions at Riley. Riley attempted to explain that he works nights and he needed to sleep. I asked Riley to point out who was singing and who he wanted to cite. Riley pointed to Norris, Johnson, Robert Facer, and Michelle, who were seated or standing near the electric piano. And she gives Michelle's last name, which I'm not mentioning because Michelle has been, you know, the charges against her have been dismissed, and she'd prefer not to have the issue raised. I think it's mentioned at certain points, but we'll wait for her to call in and talk about that issue herself if she wants. Again, continuing with this police report from Officer Schoenfield. As I attempted to have Riley start signing citations, Norris and Johnson kept trying to instigate conversation with Riley. The incident created a disturbance on the street, and several people stopped to watch. I had to ask Norris and Johnson to step away from me on several occasions because they were starting to close for my personal safety. Also, during this time, two passersby stopped and started yelling at Norris to stop wasting the taxpayers' money. Another resident of 833 Front Street, later identified as Ann Funk, leaned out of her window and yelled down to Norris and Johnson, requesting them to be quiet. Given the high emotions and the small crowd formed, I requested another unit to my location. Officer Inouye, 165, arrived on the scene a few moments later. Riley signed the following citations against the following people for Muni Code violation 9.36020, unreasonable noise, and then gives some numbers, and the four of us, Robert Norris, Robert Facer, Becky Johnson, and Michelle D. Riley also apologized to me because he didn't realize the group had become so agitated when asked to quiet down. Riley stated he also felt bad because he felt the citations fed into the group's desire to make a scene. While I was having the above-mentioned people sign their citations, Norris stated that he wanted to make a citizen's arrest against Riley for making a false police report. I explained to Norris that I would not take the private person's arrest due to the fact that I believed it without warrant, but I would put the complaint against Riley in my report and forward it to the DA. Norris insisted that he speak with a sergeant. I contacted Sergeant Garner, number 123, and advised him of the situation. Sergeant Garner was unavailable to come to the scene due to another call. He was tied up on. I got Norris's telephone number so a sergeant could call him later. Later on the shift, Sergeant Harms called Norris and left him a message. Upon returning to SCPD, I contacted Ann Funk via the telephone. Funk lives at, and I won't give her address, but she's one of the St. George residents, apparently, and had been calling out to the group to be quiet while I was facilitating the citations. Funk stated that she had heard the group started playing around 11 a.m., and they had been playing for about 4 hours. Funk works nights and has been trying to sleep when the singing and music disturbed her. I asked Funk if she recognized anyone in the group, and Funk stated she knew Norrison Johnson by name and sight from past experiences. I asked what those experiences were, and Funk stated that they were the same issues regarding noise. Funk stated she would come down and confront the group herself, but in the past, when she had done this, members of the group, what she referred to as Norse's group, had spit at her. Funk thanked her for helping with the citations and apologized because she knew how much the grief the group gives the police. It should be noted that I activated my digital recorder upon contact with Riley and later booked the audio recording as evidence. Recommendations forward to the DA for review of false police report accusation. And that is the January 6th report of Officer L. Schoenfield, badge 159, about the four $445 unreasonable noise citations she used that essentially shut down our protest on Pacific Avenue on January 6th. And frankly, we're quite unexpected. We have been, you know, approached by police at different times for different protests, but never on this for this particular thing, because we don't make unreasonably disturbing noises. I mean, we make noises people get disturbed about because of the content, but not because of the volume. And that's what's strange. As I said, I'm going to be posting this police report for those who want to examine it more closely online. If you go to indybay.org, Santa Cruz Indie Media, indybay.org/Santa Cruz, small letters, one word, you'll be able to find this report. A couple of comments. I don't know who Ann Funk is. I've never heard of anybody in my group spitting at anybody who came to criticize us. No one came and told us to keep the music down. There are numerous inaccuracies in this police report and indications of partiality. The most primary one is that we initially asked if we could sing more quietly because the officer was initially asking us to move. And this whole thing is on an audio tape that I made and I put online. Caller, give another call, try, and we'll put you on. I just wanted to finish that sentence. So if you want to call in again, please do, 427-3772, and I'll pick up. So just kind of clarifying, you know, that she there are some real errors in this whole thing. I mean, 4 hours, I arrived at 1:30, and nobody was there. Maybe Ms. Funt heard. Or Ms. Funt heard this at an earlier time, some other group, but, you know, we weren't there. We were there for at most an hour and a half, and the singing was happening for at most periods of time during the previous, I don't know, hour and 15 minutes. And it was fairly soft, and I don't think it was continuous. And if you listen to if you go to the Huff website, huffsantacruz.org, that's my website and the website for Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, and you go to the back issues or audios of this show, you will find descriptions of and actually a fairly complete audio of what happened during that period of time, interspersed with my commentary. And there were a lot of interviews, a number of interviews I did with people on the street. And if the music had really been so loud as to be physically disturbing to people on the second floor, it would have interfered with the interviews, I would think. But, you know, you can actually, you hear me interviewing people, but let's get this caller. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Robert.
Yes, hi, Robert. This is David calling from New Jersey again.
Oh, wow. How's everything going in New Jersey?
It's going okay. Well, I shouldn't say that, but I was just I was listening to your, you reading the police report, and I heard the, I listened to the archive of what happened, and this police report is definitely interesting. I don't, I have some problems with the way it was written. So there are definitely some concerns here. I just wanted to chime in on it. Here
sure.
From New Jersey.
Did you try to?
I got a chance to listen to you live here.
Good. Did you call in a moment ago, by the way?
A minute ago, yes.
Yeah, I just want to make sure that, you know, I'm also hoping to get a second call from someone who maybe calling in. But I appreciate, you know, your interest. I mean, it's a little, if the show were better organized, I'd be playing little bits from the tape that would show a different perspective and, frankly, you know, frankly, give the lie to some of the things that Officer Schoenfeld
claims. And probably a little bit biased because I'm sympathetic to people who encounter police, but it seems like it was kind of written in a way that it's like more hostile towards you than it should be.
Go ahead. Go ahead. Mm-hmm. Well, to me, the key element was there are a couple of key elements, but one of the elements that I found interesting was that my perception of what happened was that. The officer came up and interrupted, I guess it was the singing of Let It Snow. That was the song they were singing. I wasn't singing when she arrived. She claimed she'd been walking, she walked by before. Now, the obvious, if she'd walked by before, 5 minutes before, and there had been actually unreasonable noise, it had seemed to me that her responsibility was to cite us, this officer, herself, to say, you're violating the law, this is unreasonable noise, or at least to warn us. You know, you're singing too loud. It's unreasonable noise.
Right.
Instead, go ahead.
Yeah, it's such a problem that should be resolved without police, really.
For sure.
Yeah,
I mean,
but
if these people had come down and said, you know, you're too loud, it depends, of course, how they approached it. If they wanted us to shut up and move, we probably would have, you know, not done so. But, you know, there is a concern that, you know, some people who are residents and some people do try to work at night, and often, you know, you can sing away from the building, and that can make it quieter. The trouble with the way the ordinances are currently written, they created a forbidden zone of 10 feet in front of the building where you're not allowed to sit and sing and have an open guitar case if you're a musician or a display device if you're a political table. So in a way, it forces people out into the far sidewalk, so they sing back toward the building, which makes things even worse for people who, you know, don't like the music or whatever is going on the sidewalk. It's kind of a bizarre situation in Santa Cruz that the politicians apparently couldn't care less about because we repeatedly warned them about this kind of situation. But I think
it's getting so ridiculous, you know, so regulated and so arbitrary, and a attorney really should know better than to even. I mean, the things that are so reasonably close to being where any reasonable person could say it's unconstitutional to, you know, have a ban on sleeping anywhere in Santa Cruz except in a domicile. And it just raises so many absurd problems
and questions that
you have to deal with. That's just obviously... irresponsible, you know, just to even go on. But it's, you know, it's kind of like
that was the focus. That's often, that's not the only focus, but it is one of the foci or focuses that we have in these protests is laws like the sleeping ban law, laws, you know, the fact that the kinds of laws that criminalize the homeless make them more liable to die at an earlier age, the increasing death rate of homeless folks outside. I mean, all these are issues that, you know, obviously some people don't want to hear about. I mean, I wouldn't like to hear about it.
Well, for me, it's people who, you know, who haven't chosen to be wage slaves. That's part of the issue too. You know, it's like it's really freedom of being able to live your life outside the system that you don't want to be a part of or whatever, as long as you don't, you know. Hurt anybody else.
For sure.
Quite simple, right, Robert?
Yeah.
Not. The idea is simple, and it just gets so complicated with, you know, and a city attorney is who would, you know, is the person who's
kind of
wasting
shit
the...
Yeah, I hear you.
All right, Robert. Let's go back to your show.
Yeah, no, I hear you, and I'm pressing to, you know, kind of talk about more about the specifics in this police report that I found. Should we say misrepresentations or evidence of bias? I'm going to talk about that more. Anything else, David?
That's all.
Okay.
I mean, lots, but I don't want to, you know, a call from New Jersey and, you know, I really I learned a lot just listening.
Oh, well, I appreciate
from the show,
that.
You know?
Keep those commendations coming in.
All right, thanks for the time.
Thanks, man.
All right, bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah, so I'll be writing this up and putting my own reaction to this police report online, which is a little, you know, unconventional if you're defending a court case. Usually you don't want the other side to know what you're thinking. You don't want them to know your arguments. But frankly, what I try to do on this show is talk about this for the community, and that means you don't sort of hide everything until trial and do that. I mean, there's a certain risk involved because you're telling the other side where you're going to confront them on false testimony or testimony you regard as biased, but that's fine. No, we hadn't been there for 4 hours, so Sean Riley was wrong about that. And if he wasn't lying about it, he was mistaken. Well, you know, you don't have to be there for 4 hours to violate the law. You can violate the law for 4 minutes in theory. But although that's one of the aspects of the law, so unusual or so prolonged, I think, is the phrase, as part of the ordinance. Let's take a second look. Is so prolonged, so that or unusual or unnatural or harsh. And none of those adjectives apply to what we were doing, though, you know, we're not the most talented group. Sometimes we're on key, sometimes we're off key. I mean, I admit that. Though, you know, I mean, I can sing a song. You heard me sing it a moment ago. It's audible. You don't have to turn it off immediately. And again, you know, the first problem of this whole thing is that the officer walked by before and she didn't find anything illegal as she walked by. Now, Sergeant Harms tried to deal with this issue when I wrote him a Public Records Act request by saying, oh, we never make citizens. It's always up to the citizen to file this kind of complaint. That's part of our either policy or law. But as I mentioned before, when Harms was challenged to give me the section where that was stated, so far I've heard a silence from him on that issue. He's ducked it again and again as I send him email after email, or he has not mentioned it. It was clear to me from this evidence in court of these four women who you just heard the tape of that you heard my account, and there is no court record, unfortunately, of this, so you have to take my word for it. So if you think I'm lying, then you think I'm lying. But if you ask Officer Forbus, Officer David Forbus, he will probably tell you quite candidly that he testified in court that he was told by his lieutenant to issue citations, that they didn't come from a citizen. So police officers can make a judgment that there's unreasonable noise going on. Now, as I said, in this case of the four women we heard, I think it may have been a cover for inappropriate behavior by the police in entering the house and in taking somebody down to the ground and having seven squad cars. All these things make me wonder, you know, you have this, frequently, I think, overreactions by the Santa Cruz Police Department, and to cover their asses, they bring out these charges. Well, it seems clear in this case, because of the testimony under penalty of perjury, that no, you don't need to have somebody else file a complaint. The cop can file a complaint. And because Officer Schoenfield could file a complaint and did not, it indicated she did not think there was offensive noise passing as she walked by. Now, you might say, well, maybe we were singing more loudly before, you know, and maybe we've been singing for such a long period of time that it became offensive for that reason. You know, you can try to cook this up. Sure. I mean, one doesn't know what the city attorney is going to bring into court to try to do this. And if the city attorney has a favorable enough judge, it doesn't really matter what he says. The judge can do the work for him, which may be the case with what I call Snake Oil Simons, the judge that's going to hear Becky Johnson's case next Friday, week from Friday. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Robert.
Hey, hi. I was just going to say that a gong show, like you guys singing downtown, you know, if you had like a T-shirt on that said, please don't gong us.
You know, you're fading in and out. Say that again, could you?
Yeah, I was going to say that it sounds like the Gong Show, the show that used to be on in the 70s.
I know of the Gong Show. Actually, wasn't the Gong Show on in the 50s? And wasn't it a radio show?
No, it was a TV show in the 70s. They have it's sort of like an amateur hour, kind of thing, and they have...
Right, wait a minute. Now, you calling us amateurs, how can you say that?
No, I really didn't even hear it, so I couldn't assess what you guys sounded like. So I would assume it's probably the normal, typical street singer personality reality.
Could be, yeah. I mean, we're not. Well, some of the people actually were professional singers in the sense that some people do it on the streets for donation, you know. And that doesn't mean they're any good, you know. I thought we were. Some people listen, you know. They would stop and listen. So I don't know if we were as bad as we might have been, but you know, I certainly don't think it was. I know it's constitutionally protected, you know, and I know, but that's my view.
Yeah, I think it's protected because as long as it's before 10 o'clock at night, you have a right to express joy, and you have a right to communicate with other human beings in a musical way, as long as it's not offensive lyrically, or so I guess you could say, caustic that it would have to stop. But I was going to say, just to make it clear, I was near the Costco area, and this motorcycle came by. I was near a cross, you know.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It blew my left ear out, and I was, for 5 days, I couldn't hear, okay?
Wow.
Now, that's legal, okay? That's legal for these Harley Davidsons to come by and blow your head off. Now, I think that's really the crux of the problem, man, because the truth of the matter is, offensive reality creates problems. Singing does not create problems.
Yeah, I mean, although I've got to admit, if I were a resident and I heard a bunch of Republicans singing about, you know, dead babies in front of my place and going on and on about the need to have more power to President Obama's war in Afghanistan,
right.
I wouldn't be terribly happy with that. But I think I would hope that I would recognize it's their right to do it, you know.
It's the right to do it, and unfortunately people want to control what other people do and think that they have a right to tell other people what they can do and what they can't do. And that's the key with the 60s is all about,
mm-hmm.
freedom, the ability to go how you feel rather than to be worried about what other people think about what you look like or what you say, you know?
For sure. Caller, what's your first name?
My name is Paul.
Hey, Paul.
How you doing?
I'm good. I appreciate your thoughts on this. Encourage you to come down tomorrow and be a critic of our singing. We're going to be in front of the bookshop at 1:30 till 3:30.
Okay.
And that's going to be, you know, at 15:20 Pacific. I guess what is it? It's not Walnut Street. It's one down from Walnut Street. It's the street on which, it's where the pizza place is.
Oh, yeah, the pizza in the corner place, right.
Yeah, I don't know the name of that cross street, but it's 1520 Pacific, and most people know where the bookshop Santa Cruz is.
Right, so the key is, you're doing it in front of the bookshop for what particular reason?
What's that?
Is there a particular reason you're choosing the bookshop instead of, say, another place?
Yeah, well, first of all, it's where we did it on the 6th of January, so we're trying to recreate the exact scene. We're going to be videoing or audioing the whole thing so that we can later take that into court if there's a claim that we're unreasonably loud.
Right.
You know, so the people can hear exactly how loud we were.
That's right.
That's one thing. The second thing is Ryan Coonerty and Neil Coonerty are... And the Coonerty family are alternately owners, managers, involved personnel with the bookshop Santa Cruz. And Ryan Coonerty is the vice mayor, probably the mayor coming up in November.
Right.
And, of course, Neil Coonerty is the supervisor. And both of them are responsible for creating a lot of anti-homeless laws.
I hear that.
So it's not primarily a protest against Coonerty, but we've frequently been there and we do... you know, we do encourage him to come out and discuss the issues. He never does. He walked past us, actually, on this protest on the 6th. Ryan Coonerty, the vice mayor, did. So that's one of the reasons we're there. A second is that it's sort of an open area where there's one of the few sitable planters in town. I don't know if you've noticed, but the city has spent $6,000 per planter, to at least for two planters, up by New Leaf and the one by... the Pacific Trading Company and Rosie McCann's to move the railing out 3 inches so you can no longer sit there.
Yeah, isn't that interesting?
Yeah, it's crazy, man.
Well, I think the key is this. They look at it like it's a business district, and they don't want anybody just hanging around not buying anything and not participating in the business movie.
Exactly.
So I would just say the key factor is put a smile on your guys' face as you're singing, and no matter what happens, keep smiling.
Hey, you got to do it or else you develop ulcers, man.
I'll see you tomorrow down there, man.
Sounds good.
All right.
Bye-bye. And I do apologize for us not having any, at least any food planned, because we don't have our usual food meister in town. But who knows? Maybe somebody will bring some refreshments. Maybe I'll bring some soft drinks or something. We had a breakfast at the courthouse for the initial trial of it was a hearing for Becky Johnson in late March, and her trial is going to be on April 16th, as I mentioned, Friday, a week from tomorrow, at 10 a.m. We were down there for an earlier hearing. We provided coffee and coffee cake, and thank you, Jumbo Gumbo Joe Schultz, the guy who's opening a restaurant on Front Street, a new one, used to be India Joe's guy, providing food for us. A deputy came up to us and told us that it was illegal for us to have half and half for the coffee, and presented us with a copy of the health code stating that you know, thou shalt not make available milk or milk products or distribute them on county property without a permit. And we immediately, of course, put a poison label on the half and half and warned people that they would be drinking it at their own risk, and that we were having nothing to do with the distribution of that kind of questionable substance. So little kind of indications of the repression coming up. So anything more about this report that I read that I wanted to mention? Well, the officer did it at two different points say that she wanted us to quiet down or move, but she generally wanted us to move. That was the impression I got from listening to her. I could not get her to say, we want you to just quiet down, or, you know, they want you to quiet down. Will you do that? Because, frankly, I suspect if they had said that, almost everybody there would have said yes. I might have objected constitutionally and said, you know, we're not singing loudly in the first place, so, you know, thank you very much, you know, tell it to somebody else. I might have said that, or I might have said, sure, you know, we were actually reaching the end of our protesting time, because we were only going to be there for 2 hours, although they have a one-hour limit on having a display device. That wasn't what they were trying to move us under, and had they tried to do that, we would have set up, somebody else would have set up a second display device unrelated to us, and we would have continued being there as a sort of probably a secondary group. Which we've done in the past, because it's clearly, and there's a whole unconstitutional attempt to limit people from a political protest for more than an hour in front of a particular place, which is ridiculous. You have the right to protest for as long as you want, provided you're not blocking the way, and provided you're not harassing people, and provided you're not breaking windows or, you know, stopping the traffic. Though on some occasions, all those things might be appropriate, if it would save lives over in Afghanistan. But, hey, let's leave such a questionable dialogue aside. We don't do that. I don't do that. And it wasn't done here, and it isn't going to be done tomorrow. So, you know, we might have been quieter if they'd asked us. But Schoenfeld kept initially doing her, you must move along or else you'll get a ticket. And I won't do it. And we kept saying, well, how loud is too loud? How quietly do you want us to sing? She would not tell us. I refuse to answer that question. I'm not giving the ticket. Well, it's really strange. If you listen to her, and I guess David over in New Jersey, who we heard from on the phone, did listen to her. And you can listen to her if you go to huffsantacruz.org and look through look for the show that mentions that it's the bust in front of the bookshop Santa Cruz from January. And I played it either in late January or early February. And you can hear her repeatedly saying, I won't answer that question. I'm not going to answer that question. And she also kept insisting that she was going to take my demand for a false police report, my attempt to counter arrest these people who are harassing us with these arrest citations, and require them to come into court and answer for their behavior. Require them to miss time at work. Require them to put in the energy and worry and concern about dealing with citations that they were putting us through because of their false reports. Officer Schoenfeld, this is not reflected in her report, continually reassured me she was going to do that. However, once it came around to my actually trying to do that, she refused. And when I asked her and Officer Inouye why, first she said that she didn't believe me. Why wouldn't she not believe me rather than say, you know, why doesn't the same standard apply to these two complainants? In fact, there were more people to testify that it wasn't unreasonable noise. So Schoenfeld seemed to be acting as an agent of the these residents in this case. And more, as I've said before on this show, what really seemed to be happening is that the police have evolved a system downtown, along with the Downtown Association, Santa Cruz Neighbors, Redevelopment Agency, the City Manager's Office, that when they get a noise complaint, they simply go up to people who are musicians on the street and they say, move, or they'll give you a ticket. And this becomes the cover under which they intimidate people into moving. And it wasn't that they don't tell them, please play more quietly, or indicate how far away the person who's disturbed is. And it's interesting, I had a long interview today with Peter the Sax Man, or Saxy Peter, as I call him, on the streets. And I may play that, although I probably won't have time today. It'll probably be happening. I'll be playing that on Sunday. He got cited from the property manager at Borders who didn't like his saxophone playing. And candidly, there are a lot of people who don't like Peter's saxophone playing, and that doesn't bother me, really. But it really drives some people up the wall. And it's much more piercing and loud than anything we did. He apparently went and talked to the city attorney about this whole thing, and the city attorney decided to let it go and has not been ticketing him further and dismissed the ticket before it went to court. And part of this may have to do with the fact that the woman, the property manager of Borders, is, I was going to say, a nutcase, but that doesn't really seem fair. Let's say unduly sensitive to and hostile to First Amendment activities on the street. She had, I think, four people with a religious group who gave away food during the day cited for disturbing the peace or some such thing. This was a... it's not run a Curry's Sunday group. It was a Thursday or a Tuesday or Wednesday group. And I didn't ever hear the ultimate outcome of that. They were a group that came from Scotts Valley, but I don't know if they've been dissuaded from coming back or not. But anyway, she is a person who reportedly, if it's the same person, and it probably is, the Borders manager, property manager person, is particularly sensitive to and hostile to these activities on the street. And that's her perspective. Well, you know, that's how it is. Police apparently have decided to start ignoring her because, you know, the police can say, oh, we're just neutral parties, we're just conveying these tickets. But if they are conveying tickets in violation of constitutional guarantees to people and dragging them into court where there's no reasonable cause, as the police general directive policy manual requires, or probable cause, as the law requires, then they could be in trouble. They could be liable for an arrest if they make a false arrest. And when you give someone a ticket, that's an arrest. It isn't a custodial arrest. You aren't taking them in handcuffs to jail, but you are requiring them on pain of going to jail. And you can hear this reflected in the audio if you listen to the audio of this arrest, of this whole confrontation with Officer Schoenfeld and subsequently Sean Riley and Ann Funt. Ann Funt, it's, let's see, Funk, Ann Funk, sorry Ann. You can, you know, it is, it's worth listening to. I encourage people to go listen to it, and it really, of course, this is all a big waste of our time and taxpayer money and a diversion from activist energy toward, you know, we should be working on organizing to set up tent cities and to take over foreclosed properties and buildings for shelter, I think, as they are doing in San Francisco now. And in fact, I think that's what I'm going to turn to now after a brief musical break. And I think I've kind of, I think the music from the Depression has had its day. It's, it just ain't enough lyrics there to please me. Let's see here. Let's try this one and see if we can get down with a little music, and then I'll be back for some articles. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org, and the call-in number is 427-3772.
comes to visit. Then she's gone.
That was Chinatown, and I think we got Attorney Ed Fry on the phone. Is that you, Ed?
That's me.
Yeah, I think I'm having trouble with the handheld phone here. I can barely hear people, but when I put you on the studio line, we can hear you, so that's good. You were listening to John Phillips' Jack of Diamonds. Phillips was one of the lead singers and writers for lyricists for the Mamas and the Papas way back in the 60s. And you, you're not a mama, but you're a papa, aren't you there, Ed?
Yeah, oh, five times over.
Oh, God. Oh, boy. Well, good luck with all those. And, of course, you're also the father of the constitutional defense movement here in Santa Cruz, taking on too many cases with too many defendants and going to a trial on all kinds of cases. But the one that I guess I've been talking about on the line is Becky Johnson's case of the unreasonably disturbing noises or sinister sidewalk song singing stuff. So, you know, I was about to read your brief in the Robert Facer sleeping band case, but you can talk about either one of these issues if you want. I know that these constitutional issues, particularly your fight against the absurd and vicious drug war, has been going on for decades. You ran for DA in the 90s. You're running for Congress this year. And at the same time, you found time, I don't know how, to defend people in court, which is an elaborate process often.
Right. So Robert Facer's case is an interesting situation. He's homeless, of course, and he was arrested, or that is, cited, awakened brusquely and rudely by the policeman. When was it? Last fall sometime, or last summer, June, I think. And was told that he could either sign on the dotted line of his notice to appear, or he could be thrown in jail right now. He was sleeping on the beach in Santa Cruz because he was protecting his boat, which was anchored 100 yards off the beach. And his boat is the thing he usually sleeps in, but sometimes it's just not possible for him to do that. It's a boat he built himself with his own hands. He's an Amish minister, so he doesn't have any mechanical apparatus attached to it, like so much as a motor or anything like that. It's a paddle boat, but it's an outrigger. Anyway, so he was sleeping on the beach, And the cop came along and woke him up rudely and gave him a ticket and told him to go to jail or sign here, and then told to move on after he signed. Okay, so there's the offense that's been committed already against him. So he had to go to court, and he pled not guilty, and in the so he was put on trial, and I represented him at the trial. And in the course of that trial, the judge admitted inadvertently that every time someone comes in with a ticket like this, that she sends them over to the director of the Homeless Services Center and tells them to get a statement in writing that there were no beds available that night. Once they get that, then they schlep back over to court for their second hearing in court, and the judge announces with all her graciousness that, oh, the case is now dismissed. You're not guilty. Well, great. He's not guilty, and yet he's got to go through all this punishment, et cetera.
And it's particularly abusive because during the summer, it is a well-known and well-established fact that there is zero shelter for people, that any shelter spaces are taken up by disabled folks, old folks, folks on waiting lists, because the Winter Armory shelter isn't open at all. And these tickets for Facers, that Facer faced, so to speak, were in the summer. So they were during that period of time when the police knew, the city attorney knew, the Homeless Service Center knew, and presumably Commissioner Kim Baskett, who tried this case, also knew that there was no shelter. It didn't require getting a letter to prove anything unless your purpose is to simply provide a pretext so as not to face constitutional problems in court. You can claim, oh, see, we allowed him a necessity defense, a letter.
Right. So Robert Facer was honest enough to admit to the judge that he preferred not to go to the shelter, even if there had been one, which there was not. There was none available that night. But he said, even if there had been, by then he was so disgusted with the bureaucracy of trying to get into the shelter that he had given up over a year ago. So she said, oh, well then, if you wouldn't have accepted it if it had been there, then you are guilty. So we're on appeal. So my argument is that not only was there no victim to this crime other than Robert Facer, but Robert Facer himself was victimized and had his constitutional rights to privacy and to be free from cruel punishment violated by the police action and by the court action. So, and it's my position that anybody who is sleeping outdoors on any night when there's no shelter available, the police should pick up the telephone first, before they send out their cops, they should pick up the telephone, call the Homeless Services Center, and find out if there are any beds available, in which case most every night they're going to find out, no, there are none available. So they should suspend their enforcement right then and there.
It sounds a little too reasonable, Ed. I'm sorry.
That's what we're going for, though, reasonableness here.
Now, wait a minute. We have unreasonably disturbing ordinances and unreasonably disturbing police officers. You don't want that to end, do you?
Yeah. Luckily, we also had another admission in this case, this particular case, which was by the policeman. When I asked him, well, what was it that motivated you to go out and enforce this law that night? And he said, well, his mission was directed by the shop owners who wanted them to clear out the beaches and clear out all the public spaces. So it's the shop owners, the commercial motive behind this law that's the real problem. The shopkeepers don't want these unkempt homeless people cluttering up the streets and beaches of Santa Cruz. They want to make nice and pretty for the tourists.
Mm.
So.
Well, without the tourists, there would be no tax base. Without the tax base, there would be no social services. That would rebound against the homeless. So you're actually cutting off the very throat of the homeless people you claim to be supporting, Mr. Attorney Ed Fry.
Yes, sorry about that. But my feeling is that everywhere in this country, given our Constitution, the homeless people should be treated in this way. That is to say, left alone when there's no shelter available. So that's what we're arguing in the brief, and we even invoked the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and the Convention Against Torture.
Because, well, no, that's just
sleep deprivation is slow drip tyranny. It's a minor, that is to say, a milder form of torture than John Yoo advocated. But
yeah, we have milder torture. I mean, it's not torture; it's just intense interrogation. And it's really, come on, Ed. You don't need these unsightly homeless people cluttering up the Santa Cruz scene, do you?
Well, you're being the devil's advocate again, Robert. But
yeah.
It just won't work with me.
Oh, you angel, you! You know, well, what about this other case that's coming up and that they're trying to ram down your throat because they wouldn't give you a continuance, at least haven't yet?
Well, okay, yeah, on that one, I made a motion today. I went into Judge Simon's court and got her to sign a calendaring order setting it for April the 13th, next Tuesday, for a motion to continue the trial date because the present trial date of April 16th is way too unreasonable.
And is that being opposed by the city? We're talking, of course, about the Becky Johnson Sinister Sidewalk singing citations, right?
Right, right.
And
there's
so,
highly questionable prosecutions of Becky Johnson and yourself and Robert Facer again and Michelle Doykin, which was already dismissed yesterday, or day before yesterday, was it? Michelle's
Tuesday.
Case was just dismissed because there's nobody there, which raises another issue of selective enforcement here. For Becky's case, the first trial date, which was March the 26th, three cops and the city attorney show up for this horrible criminal, Becky Johnson.
And two witnesses, two civilian witnesses, I
and
understand.
Two civilian witnesses, besides.
I was told, yeah.
But for Michelle's case, she was equally a defendant in the same event, same thing that happened on the same day. She
same
was
police
there,
report, yeah.
Allegedly she was there. Well, and nobody showed up to enforce it against her. So
there
what's
wasn't
going
even
on here? What's going on
there
is
was, yeah.
that you guys, Robert Norris, Robert Facer, and Becky Johnson light up all these neon lights whenever your name pops up in the DA's, not the DA, but the city attorney's office, and they send out all, you know, full armor against you.
Hmm.
So, in any event, hopefully we'll get a continuance because this present trial date of April 16th is horribly inconvenient. We're going to have the 2 or 3 or 4 day trial in Becky's case because of all the witnesses and documents, and yet they're only giving us 2 hours for trial, which is absurd. So
now I know Simons was rather hostile to you on March 26th when you were in court. Did you actually just file papers with the clerk, or did you have any contact with her when you filed
papers?
Oh,
I had direct contact with her, and she was quite mild mannered and pleasant today.
Oh, maybe she had a better day today.
Yeah, she was acting as a small claims judge, and then I came in between hearings, she had me come up and to the bench, and she signed my my little calendaring order for the motion to continue the trial date.
But she has no choice, and she didn't grant the motion, right? This wasn't an ex parte.
She didn't grant the motion. She granted my request for an order setting a date to hear the motion.
Right, so you're looking for some more time, because I know you have another trial starting, what, 3 days later after this? After
April the 19th, Monday, April the 19th, of a huge jury trial, which is going to take at least six or seven trial days.
Now, you spoke with City Attorney Barisoni yesterday, right? Did he say he was going to oppose this motion for a continuance? Did you mention you were going to do it?
Yes, he said he was going to oppose it. The reason I called him in the first place was to suggest to him that he give up the enforcement of all these cases because it's foolish and a waste of resources of the court and the city, and not to mention all the witnesses and the parties and hassles. And the final thing was that it's foolish to try to enforce this very vague noise statute against people who are singing a political song in the middle of the day right on the main thoroughfare. I mean, that's absurd. You have every constitutional right to go out and sing a political song at that time and place. So
what are you going to do when they arrest the four of us tomorrow as we sing again in front of the Bookshop Santa Cruz at 1:30, which we plan to do?
Well, I don't think they'll arrest you if you'll sign a new notice to appear.
We may just ask to be taken to court before a magistrate to see if there's actually probable cause in this case.
Yeah.
And if, of course, the courts are likely to say, sure, the police said yes, so we say yes. But we'll see. And I'm hopeful that there will be no consequences at all, though I did speak with Officer Warren today. And Officer Warren said, I hear you folks are going to be at the bookshop tomorrow. And I said, yeah, we'll be in front of the bookshop at 1:30 to 3:30 singing subversive, sinister songs. And he said, well, I'm probably going to be called down on a complaint, and I'll probably have to tell them that there's no problem, and I'll leave. Warren, as in the past, declined to issue citations. And in a way, it seems awfully arbitrary. It seems like some officers, you know, they don't want to bother with the paperwork. Others, maybe this eager beaver, Officer Schoenfield is a new officer, the one who issued the citations in January. So it just seems strange, though, that the city attorney is backing all this up with so much legal expense and energy and muscle. I guess you think it has to do with the fact that we are notorious activists, huh?
Yep. And Barisoni claims that he's just on a retainer fee, so it's not going to make any difference in terms of expenses to the city or cost to the city of his services. He says he would be performing these services on that retainer fee, which he's already received. So who knows? But it's still absurd, and it's a waste of time and waste of...
Well, he's making a choice. And, you know, I put in the city attorney's... If you go to the Sentinel website, you can find a mechanism that lets you look for how much each city employee makes. Like Dick Wilson makes $219,000 a year. He's the most highly paid official in the city. He's a city manager. Mike Rotkin makes $25,000 a year. The city attorney, it does not have a number for, which leads me to believe that he may be on retainer, but he also gets paid additionally for other, he bills for hours. And that was my understanding talking to attorney Kate Wells, that he does get paid for hours in addition to a retainer. We don't have a flat fee for a city attorney. You know, we don't have a city attorney's office. We hire a private attorney on a retainer, and we pay him additionally. But, you know, I'd have to get more confirmation on that. We're talking with attorney Ed Fry, who's doing all this, of course, for the thousands of dollars we're paying him. Right, Ed?
Right. I'm just rolling in dough.
And I intend to, as I said before, triple your salary at an appropriate time. So, Ed, is there anything else you want to add? I know you're... You know, you're taking this on at a time when you have all kinds of, not only, I guess, I hear rumors of personal crisis in your life, which I'm not going to get into, but, you know, you're running a congressional campaign, you know, and these are not the best economic times. Why are you doing all this?
Well, it's all of a piece, you know. I'm running for Congress because of the corporate control over our legislatures and over our media and over our courts. And over our elections. I mean, the corporations are in complete control. They're the ones who sent this officer out to give Robert Facer his trial, you know, this commercial interest. So it's the same motive that I have in running for Congress. I want to overcome that corporate control and give a voice to the people.
Is the drug war as important an issue for you now as it was in the 90s?
Oh, yeah, it's even more important now because it's right on our doorstep there in Mexico, a warfare. You know, it's like very close to outright warfare along the U.S.-Mexico border. And, the killing goes on everywhere in the drug war, and the abuses and the waste of lives, the waste of human lives. I mean, it's just outrageous that this has gone on for so many decades. So it's got to come to an end, we've got to turn our attention. So many people, thousands, hundreds of thousands of people, nonviolent offenders in prisons and jails for these minor offenses.
Yeah, the arrests by the Santa Cruz Police Department itself in the city have risen in marijuana cases, as documented by the Measure K Commission, which does, probably that's the only useful thing that's come out of this commission all year. Ed, when exactly and where is your hearing seeking a continuance in the Becky Johnson sinister sing-song case?
That'll be Tuesday, April 13th at 10 a.m. in Department in the Superior Court, Santa Cruz.
And do you anticipate this to be, what kind of evidence are you going to be presenting? Is it going to be a long hearing, a five-minute hearing?
The only evidence is what I've already submitted, which is my declaration. It's about 4 or 5 pages long, mostly concerning the trial that I have coming up, that jury trial I mentioned, coming up on April the 19th. And even in that same case, on April the 16th, the same date now set for Becky's trial, I also have a trial calendar call in that jury trial that's coming up the following Monday. So that's going to take up my whole afternoon.
And your argument when City Attorney Barisoni says, hey, you should have known this before you took the case on, why, you know, you're going wah, wah, wah.
No, when I took the case on, I had no idea the court was going to pick April the 16th for a trial date and not listen to my concerns. Hey, I can't do it on April 16th. She said, I don't care. You're going to do it. So,
what about discovery? I know you've attempted to get some discovery from the police department. What kind of documents are you seeking from them?
Well, I just have a list here that I submitted. It's all the emails that you and others have engaged in with the police on the standards and enforcement of this noise problems. I want anything having to do with Ryan Coonerty. I asked for that because he was a potential witness in this case. I asked for anything that was produced in the way of videos or audio recordings by Ann Funk or the other Riley, Patrick Riley.
Sean Riley.
Sean Patrick Riley.
Mm-hmm.
And so on. So I got a list, and I can give you a copy of it.
And I think that if you don't get the discovery, you don't really have adequate access to the evidence. And in theory, I know an appeal will immediately be successful if you lose the trial. I've seen what happens in the appeals courts and other cases. But, you know, I think you're raising the issues is really an important thing, Ed, and I want to thank you both on my own personal behalf and also... I can't speak for the community, but I just think you're doing a good thing for the community, whatever the community thinks.
All right. Well, I hope the community pays attention to my candidacy for Congress running against Sam Farr, because that, like I said, my whole thing is to get a voice for the people. And so that's what I'm going to do is run as an independent and... you know, I hope we can shake things up.
Well, I hope that you would be voting against the military appropriation that Farr votes in favor of.
Absolutely, yeah. We have to. It's time now to do what Barack Obama promised he was going to do when he was running for president. He said, not only do we have to get out of Iraq, we have to change the mindset that got us into Iraq. And that's what I want to help him do.
Hey, Ed, you're invited to come on down tomorrow and observe these ne'er-do-wells who are singing, and maybe you can take an opportunity to make a quick exit from the case once you hear how horribly we're singing downtown, 1:30 to 3:30 in front of the bookshop.
All right, thanks for the invite. I'll see you there probably.
All right, man. Thank you.
All right, Robert. Bye-bye.
Bye. And we're approaching from the cream to the dregs time. That's Uncle Dennis, who's due to come pounding on the door shortly. I, as usual, I've run out of time. I'm hoping that I'll be coming back on Sunday with a lot more time and possibly be able to zip through some of the stuff I wasn't able to do today. I will try to read one email that I got, which I think is important to... I actually promised I would do this, so I'm going to try to keep my word. And I do hear the great, who's that at the door? Uh-oh, it's the giant at the door. I have to let him in, otherwise he might eat me. So it's, all right, you're early, giant.
Hello.
So, anyway, we're on the air here. Uncle Dennis has arrived with his sacred prayer bowl and a bag of tricks. Let's see where that leads. But here's the... Here's what I wanted to pass your way before I pass out of here. Let's see if I can do it. There's an interesting Sentinel website where you can actually find out the salaries of every city employee, every county employee, but not for some reason the city attorney. And I suspect that that's because the city attorney does
not just operate on retainer, but he also operates on a, you know, a per hour basis. But we got to get, you know, more information on this, and perhaps I will later on have better information. Here's an email from White Lion, Take Back Santa Cruz from Take Back Santa Cruz. And apparently last week on John Sandich, Sleepy John Sandich's show, Dennis here is, I'm not sure what Dennis is doing, but...
I was trying to get these headphones hung up, Robert.
He's dealing with mechanical problems. On Sleepy John Sandich's Wednesday Talk About Show, he had on the Take Back Santa Cruz gang and apparently gave them a sympathetic hearing. I've asked Sleepy John if we can get a copy of that tape or maybe get a, be able to put some people on the show that have a different point of view, but John hasn't responded, and frankly, John is not one of my big fans, so that's not surprising.
Do you have any fans, Robert?
I will find out. Call in if you're a fan of Uncle Robert. There you go. Don't get horny with me. Appropriate. Anyway, her editorial reads, we, the real local citizens of Santa Cruz, need to take back Santa Cruz from right-wing, fascist, military-style, police state thugs who currently persecute our poor and homeless, steal homeless people's possessions in camps, and illegally ticket people who need to sleep at night. Two, from rich, arrogant, eco-terrorist, bubble-headed, beach blonde, soccer moms who drive around in gas-guzzling SUVs and Hummers, spewing massive amounts of CO2 into our air, water, and soil without a care in the world for our children's future. I suppose they might include bumper sticker car guys, too, in that, but that's another matter. Three, from right-wing propaganda outlets such as KUSP, who brainwash their listeners with Jewish-controlled, NPR, National Propaganda, Pentagon Radio, and from right-wing natural food establishments such as Whole Foods Markets, who are ripping off our community with their non-organic, irradiated and overpriced food, and who hypocritically peddle ultra-right-wing products such as Coors beer. Four, from spiritually deranged right-wing brain-dead zombie Christians who are spreading their right-wing Christian filth, trash, and propaganda in our libraries and our schools and through our local media outlets. Five, from hordes of brainwashed idiot moron shoppers who believe it is their divine right to fill their SUVs with all manner of materialistic crap which they don't need, while on their mad, spiritually depraved shopping sprees, using the courts and the local police state to remove and criminalize anyone who stands in their way. Six, from the corporate right. Well, actually, this goes on at some length. So, an interesting rant, which, you know, I partially agree with and partially take issue with, not being part of the Jewish conspiracy myself. I don't wish to. Well, you catch my drift, Uncle Dennis. Uncle Dennis is ready to be my 3-minute guest here as we close down the show. Dennis, welcome to Free Radio.
I was just wondering if you had taken sound pressure level readings.
For the unreasonably
unreasonable noise. Yeah.
You know, that's a very good question. I believe Becky Johnson, who is going to be the first really contested case in court, has a cell phone which has that kind of thing on it, where you can actually see primitively what the readings are or aren't, and so maybe...
You realize, of course, that the California Highway Patrol no longer uses sound level meters to take sound measurements for things like cars and motorcycle mufflers because the readings are exceedingly inaccurate.
And are
highly dependent upon place and setting.
Well, that's an interesting claim, Uncle Dennis. I suppose we'll have to consult with the city attorney to see if he agrees with you on that issue, though actually he probably doesn't engage in that kind of questionable behavior. No, it's interesting to hear that. In fact, part of the law is that you don't – sound readings are not required in court proceedings for unreasonably disturbing noise convictions, which yes. So, I invite you to come on down, Dennis. I know you love coming to our protests, and you're a favored central figure in such things. So tomorrow, of course, we'll be having another one, 1:30 at the Bookshop Santa Cruz, 1520 Pacific. Bring your own food, bring your own instrument, bring your friends.
Unfortunately, Robert, some of us have to work for a living.
I think we're all working in our way, Dennis. But hey, I know that there are ne'er-do-wells who make those claims that we have to essentially dismiss as
non-wage slaves, and certainly not entitled to any corporate benefits. I want to thank you for being with me in this edition of Bathroom Spears Broadsides. Dennis, I have no music in, so you better whip out a CD. And I'll be back before I am. You can always call me on the Huff line, 423-HUFF. I'm glad to say Sunday's shows are now being archived. This show is archived on huffsantacruz.org, but won't hit the archives probably for a day or two. And that's all, folks, as they say at KSCO.
And you're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.1 and www.freakradio.org. I am Uncle Dennis. And I'm in the nice warm seat that Robert has been farting in for the last 2 hours. And I will be here till 11 o'clock, warming the seat in my own unique ways. You are, of course, listening to From the Cream to the Dregs, a weekly exploration of the music of the 60s and the 70s. Of course, we do have a Brew of the Week coming up in 25 minutes or so. And, of course, the Earth First Update at 9 o'clock. And at 10, we'll have the Spotlight Group of the Week. So stay tuned for all of that, plus the Hour of Slack at 11, right here on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1, www.freakradio.org.